Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, we have a very special guest, Brandon Joe. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I honestly didn't expect this, but I'm always welcome to any sort of opportunities to talk to cool people, so thank you.
Thank you. So, Brandon and I were introduced through the provost of Revell College. This is the college I attended, 40-plus years ago. And let me tell you about Brandon. Brandon Joe is a second-year student at University of California, San Diego. I believe you're a member of Revell College as well.
And, yep.
He's a co-founder of Treasure Hacks, which is a nonprofit that gamifies soft skills to help overcome the gaps of informal education. And besides his startup, he's studying computer science, sales, and marketing to pursue product management and understand setting up an environment to help others achieve their passions. So, Brandon, when Provost Yu told me about you, I was very interested in meeting you because you're obviously going places, and I'm very impressed by how much you accomplished so far in your life. And so I was hoping we can talk about how you got to where you are today and maybe about where you're going to go in the future. So
yeah.
Let me start off by asking you, the nonprofit started, what, 3 years ago already?
Yes, it started, almost 3 years. I say 2.5, but I looked up on my LinkedIn, I'm like, 3 years? That's crazy.
So if I take your age now and subtract 3, you were quite young when you started it. Tell me how a middle teen starts a nonprofit. Tell me what went into that.
Yeah. So admittedly, it wasn't a nonprofit when we founded it 3 years ago. Initially, we started it as a hackathon organization that just hosted programming competition. And frankly, I started it on a whim. At the time, I met my first mentor, Howard Tai, who's a software engineer at Microsoft, just from my cousin who had him as our godfather. And he helped me through and like encouraged me. All he did, I brought the idea to him. I'm like, I want to host a hackathon. He's like, do it. So I hosted 1, then 2, then 4. And by that point, I realized I arrived in college. I built soft skills from bringing in speakers, sponsors, and mentors. And then sort of arrived on college with opportunities just kind of landing on my lap. So I wanted to deliver that same sort of skill set to other students so they could find the same skills and places where they can express themselves.
So tell me again, let's back up. What is a hackathon?
A hackathon is a 24-hour or 36-hour product development and pitch competition where we brought in speakers, we brought in judges, all to help students to basically put just a product they came up with in those last hours together. And we ran it during COVID, so it was completely online, and we had bunch of people from all over the world joining in. It was really cool, but yeah.
So are there hacks? What does it mean? Are you teaching them how to present?
The word hack is derived from not necessarily like hacking in the way that you might see in like a movie, but hacking in the way of like hacking a problem. So solving something in the world, this could be about the environment. Let's say, for example, the decline in the population of bees. And a student comes up with a way of tracking every single bee and making sure that they are in locations that they can sustain themselves, which that was just a random example I came off the top of my head, but that is an example of a project a student would make.
And why did you even want to put on Hackathon? Where, how did that idea come up?
I mean, honestly, I joined one. I thought that I could do better and just tried it.
And then how did you get sponsored? How does that process happen?
Sponsors? So in high school, I was reaching out to, well, first I asked my dad, and then I also looked onto other hackathons. I looked at their list of sponsors. I compiled all of their emails, and then I just started emailing them one at a time, just because my student brain didn't know how to make a template. So I just made every single one unique and chugged through it, and it ended pretty well. So can't complain.
It's funny to hear you say that, because back in the 70s, we didn't have computers, and I did similar things, writing individual letters to people asking, hey, would you contribute to our projects? So I know what you went through. Go ahead.
It's just an invaluable experience, because now I think those are the skills that led me to be able to find opportunities around on campus, because it helped me overcome my fear of, like, just reaching out, asking for help, or satisfying my curiosity if I think someone is very interesting, that I can just cold email them.
That's so true. And I think, again, you're reminding me of myself. When I was your age, when I came to the same UCSD campus, I got involved in the newspaper, and I had to go interview people to learn about what they did. And so I would cold call people and talk to them. So it's interesting. There's some parallels here. But what I'm curious, you're in the STEM field. It seems to me people in STEM don't do a lot of soft hacks. How did you get interested in this?
That's a good question. I mean, I always felt oriented in this direction. I think this roots back to, I had a bit of, like, social problems as a kid, and I was always fascinated by how to reconcile with these problems, or to make sure that I was able to hold a conversation that was a conversation. So I watched a lot of YouTube videos. I made it a point in high school to talk to every single person in my friend group individually. And from there, my skills just kind of started growing, and it led me to a lot of different places and opportunities. And that kind of fed back into the loop of me wanting to keep working and reaching out, and kind of led me to where I am today.
Now I can hear questions from my patients who have social anxiety. How do you get past that? How do you talk to other people? How do you do that?
It's a good question, because I have to think about that for a second, because I always felt perhaps I'm just trying to think back to my childhood, because at least I was just kind of a yapper. I just said things to people. They just kind of ignored me. And I was like one of those kids in school that you just did not want to sit next to, because I always was getting in trouble for talking in inappropriate times and all sorts of the wazoo when the teacher is talking. But that perhaps was not something that I got into until a bit later, because the truth of it all is that back I was like that up until seventh grade, and that's when the anxiety started to build, and I went into, like, a depression from seventh grade to ninth grade. I realized what kind of person I was, that the conversations I was having an annoyance. If you go back and you flip my personality currently, a 180, that's pretty much who I was today. So I had, like, anger issues, you couldn't touch me, I didn't listen to you, all of those fun stuff. And it sort of just hit me that I was an absolutely horrible person at the time, although I was just 12. And for 2 years, I pretty much just absolutely detested my being and felt guilty about who I was with the opportunities that I had, that I was doing absolutely nothing. And a year after those 2 years, I told my friends at the time how I felt, and I got straight denial, like complete silence. And it was at that moment that I realized that I needed to do something myself, that I can't give the opportunity I have to anyone else because I was already born with it and given. So from then on, I made little changes. I just kind of looked, because I used to think about all the mistakes I made in a day and just sort of pelted myself down. But from that year on, I took a different route where I thought about what I did and then what I could do better and then ended that spiral downwards. So it took a year, but I dug myself out of that. And that's also kind of why I wanted to do stuff for other people. That's what I'm driven towards, helping other people, and possibly a reason why I created the hackathon, although I don't quite acknowledge that as true.
Well, you know, it's really impressive that you dug yourself out of the hole. So many kids get stuck in the hole. If I knew you when you were 12, I would have said to you, no, you're a really good person who doesn't know how to express himself, as opposed to how you felt, which was you're a horrible person. You never were a horrible person. You just maybe didn't manifest well. And one of the reasons we met, and we talked a little bit earlier today, which we can go into now, is how do we help people recognize that their potential? How can people recognize that, yes, I can do things in a good way, even if I have faced obstacles, or even if I'd made mistakes in the past? So maybe we can talk about why you were interested in meeting me when you heard about what I do. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, I was at an event called Revel Mondays, where Paul Yu just brings together a bunch of people from the Revel area, whether it's the teachers, these are professors he knows, and we just talk casually. And one of the topics that came up, I forget how exactly we landed on this, but I was describing how I was interested in setting up an environment to help make change in people. And he was like, he brought up your name, basically. And he was like, so there's this guy who used to be a doctor, and then he got into hypnotism, where he helped people to find what made them tick in a very short amount of time. And I see that as one of the most vital elements of creating curiosity in a person, is understanding what makes you tick, what makes you interested in X, Y, and Z topics. So I wanted to talk to you instantly after that. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and actually, when I heard about you, I was very interested in meeting you, because we share the same mission of helping people help themselves, if you would. And actually, one of the things I saw on the Treasure Hacks website is the idea that this is not taught in schools, and you trying to fill the gap with teaching people these soft skills. You want to talk a little bit about how, if you couldn't change academia, would you change it, or would you have Treasure Hacks at the side? How would you change things?
What I imagine Treasure Hacks as is a supplement towards academia, because I believe, like, just if you look back at the history of academia, it was created to help researchers. Like, it was created for academics to simply learn more, know more. And it was only up until, I had a conversation with another professional about this. I think it was somewhere in the 1970s or 60s, where it was changed to be oriented towards helping people to get a job. And so I don't believe, based off of these modern standards, I don't think that school helps necessarily to get you to that job, because one of the most important things is that you're an effective worker, can work in a team, can talk to each other, and that's something that is evidently lacking from the academic setting. But also, there's no other place like the academic world to learn in depth about a topic. And if we remove such a place, then what other place could we go to where so many academics are together with so many intelligent people from all the world to educate these academics?
So if Treasure Hacks is going to, or its maybe daughter organizations are going to help complement academic education, do you think this should be an ongoing thing, like in your ideal world, in secondary education? So every quarter or every week there's a kind of a soft skill session, or is it a one-time workshop over 4 years? What do you envision?
What I envision is something over time, because, of course, like anything else, you can't learn from just one day. So I'm currently working with a career center to host a couple of workshops every single quarter next year for the soft skills. More specifically, we're teaching networking and presenting. So the best and most relevant avenues for students to understand soft skills. And just because of the matter that students, like, I told you earlier that one of the most interesting things that I found after going and talking to a professor at a conference was that students who, there were underserved students in Maryland where he created a program that just taught them soft skills. And these students were more valuable to the biotech companies that employed them than master's students, all simply because they could admit when they did something wrong. And that was shocking to me. And if we could combine both of those worlds together and the ability to act, to function effectively in a workplace and the academic side, then theoretically we should be able to create a lot more change and effective change than we would before.
And as you're talking, I can see why companies would want to support your efforts, because if you can train students to be that way, they'll have more potential employees.
Definitely.
For them.
It's just the biggest problem that we encounter right now is that in most of the academic situations and like colleges, they have a career center already, and they pay people to theoretically teach students these skills. But a conversation I had with another entrepreneur who's running a revitalized sort of job application journey, sort of, we had a conversation about how, nothing against the academic systems, but it's very difficult to have any sort of change or a change in mindset. So many, the biggest, or the, a good example of this is for networking. A lot of what the Career Center teaches you is sort of like slam pitching, where you pitch for like 90 seconds to whoever you're talking to, and then you hope that you get an internship. But in this sort of day and age in the format, a more effective manner of finding opportunities is to just simply be a human, human-to-human interaction, and having a conversation on the basis that you're not talking to a opportunity, you're talking to a person. And you get to know them and you build that trust. Because we're constantly being bombarded with different information and so many people that want something from you, especially if you're of high status in an academic setting, that you don't have many people that just take time to connect person to person.
As you describe this, I'm thinking of the advice I give the teens I work with when they're out, say, in the sales. In a sales job, if, whether they're a server in a restaurant or in a working in a clothing store or working at, as a car salesman, I ask them, what is your job? And oftentimes they say, well, sell a car or deliver the food. And I said, no, your job is to make sure your customer has the best possible day. You want to get to know them, and then since they're there to buy something, they might buy something from you. So I'm wondering if the same applies to what you're saying. So rather than going into an interview and wanting to get the job, focus on helping the interviewer have a good day by being pleasant with them. And then since they're interviewing you, they might like you and hire you. Maybe that's what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think one of the most vital lessons that was taught to me is that people won't remember what you say, but people will remember how you make them feel. And in this when you're trying to apply to a job, that's what will distinguish you, is that these interviewers will remember how you make them feel. So if you ask them questions about themselves, if you want to get to know them as a human being, that's something that's fundamentally something that we want as a person. So, and you don't get that very often. Interesting manner of approaching job applications than simply pitching yourself as like, I'm best for you. It's, I make you feel good, why don't you hire me, sort of vibe.
It reminds me how realtors sell houses. They'll have baking cookies in the oven, and there's a nice smell of baking cookies that reminds you how of good times in the past, and then you're more apt to buy that house because you're good.
Yeah, so we should just start giving everyone cookies, basically.
Fresh cookies. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, the caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Brandon Joe, is sharing his observations as the co-founder of Treasure Hacks and some of the methods he's taught his students as to how to, for example, interview for a job. So one of the things that you asked me about is how do we help people buy into getting soft skills or learning how to find their own life meaning. And I'm wondering what kind of hurdles you've experienced as you've tried to get the word out.
Privilege I've experienced in finding opportunities or...
You've had, obviously you've been lucky in some ways in getting Treasure Hacks off the ground and putting on the hackathons, but now you have this vision of spreading the word, and I'm guessing you've met some challenges as well. So what kind of obstacles have you seen, or what kind of challenges do you foresee happening?
Yeah, so on the student side at least, the main challenge is the intangibility of soft skills, because you're not going to be able to see very physical results. They just sort of happen over time, and especially because you can't switch up the personality of a student in maybe 6 hours. It takes time to be able to be comfortable in a conversation. It takes time to be able to come up with good questions for the person that you're talking to. And for me, it took me 2 years to be comfortable and able to come up with questions instantly in conversation, because otherwise I would spend time just sitting there thinking about a question, and that it just feels uncomfortable. But so that's probably the biggest challenge, is the time it takes for students to pick it up, and the fact that of course, when you get soft skills, you don't instantly get an internship. You have to go out there and talk to people with the soft skills, too. So that's for the student side. And then on the education side, as I mentioned, the Career Center is, I don't want to put it in rough terms because they do their best, and I'm friends with the directors over there, but they have methods that aren't quite aligned with the current industry. I think one of the examples that I think about often is there's a debate between free and paid internships, and very often the Career Center people say that free internships, you'll get taken advantage of. You should never do them. But my most fruitful encounters with people have happened from taking on a free internship. And then talking about the, like, for example, the two current internships that I had right now, I offered myself as free help, and then they just ended up being paid for both. So just in the manner of, you never know what can happen, and if there's an opportunity out there and to build your skills or to offer yourself as help, offering yourself as help, I'm not really spiritual in the manner of like, oh, you offer yourself, you offer help and you get something good back to you, but truly there is something around those lines that happens, because many of the encounters where I came in with good intention just simply to help out has led me to either like potential sponsors for my events, long time mentors, or the internships I talked to you about.
Yeah, I think as someone who has offered internship, I can tell you that when an intern comes, so they start off as free. I'm in private practice. I'm not a corporation. But when I've had interns who come in and work really hard and do a great job, I've paid them each time because I think they deserve to be compensated. So I think if you're a good person and if you do good work, I would take free internships for sure, because if you're working, by the way, I think if the person giving you an internship doesn't value you, then you probably don't want to work with them anyway. So I think there's little to lose to work with somebody good. You can only gain, even if it's a free internship to start with.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the big misconception, is that all free internships are trying to take advantage of you. And I've honestly, for most of the internships or opportunities that I've taken on, very rarely did I come across someone who just wants to take advantage of you. There's probably some sort of tendency for people to assume the worst, and or at least just myself trying to reason out why potentially the Career Center might have been oriented this way, is they're incentivized to bring in paid internships for the students as they graduate. So in having free internships, that kind of contrast the sort of image of the school, which may lead to them being a little bit more negatively minded towards them. Who knows?
Well, the other thing is not every student comes in and does stellar work. I've had students who've shadowed me, who've fallen asleep when we're seeing patients. Mm-hmm. That does not impress me as a somebody who offers an internship.
Would make sense.
Even though I know it's college is hard, I get that. But you got to be professional, you know. So I would never pay that kind of person. So perhaps the Career Center is dealing with students of all kinds, and on average. But I don't think I would take advantage of that student. I just wouldn't appreciate them very much. So you see it from both sides, I suppose. Have the students, when you've offered soft skills to students, have you gotten pushback from them? Nah, this isn't for me.
I'm thinking about 6 weeks ago, I hosted a large, or we're calling a Spark Symposium, and it just covered like networking, presenting, pitch competition, financial literacy in about a span of 7 hours. And I was pitching for that 2 weeks before just on the campus walk. And for the most part, I don't remember any particular pushback towards soft skills. Although the numbers that we had at the event tell otherwise. So there's many variables to why that may have happened. But the students who did arrive at our event said, oh, yeah, I noticed that I didn't have soft skills and I wanted to come. And I'm like, that makes sense. But for other students, outside of me pitching to the event to them, are just incredibly focused on the academic side of things. And it's the most fascinating thing to me is that they're struggling so hard to get a opportunity out there, and they pick up like two majors. I have a friend I just talked to yesterday, took up two majors, two minors, two internships, because she's worried about not getting an opportunity. And in contrast, I was trying to encourage her to spend more time to make these quality, at least every single one of these endeavors that she takes on, quality, and also work on skills that would make her a effective candidate just as a person, like someone you would want to work with. Nothing against her, but in building up the skills to be able to ask, do you need help? Very fascinating and helpful towards me is when I, in many of my internships, all I did was just ask, like, do you need help? And that already put me miles above other students who just assumed or just did what was required of them at these opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, the notion that a small change in attitude can have a very large, long-acting effect, and people need to be mindful. And this is true in a job. It's also true personally. So one of my interns, I remember the very first time I met him, and he wanted a life hack, if he would, or I taught him how to talk to his subconscious, and I just asked a simple question, do you have any advice for the young man? He said yes, and the advice was, you're okay. And at that point, his mind cleared up and said, I'm okay, I'm doing all right. And his life changed from that, just taking a moment listening to himself. So it doesn't necessarily take a long time to make a big change in your life or career. We'll be right back. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, our special guest, Brandon Joe, who's a second-year UCSD student and co-founder of Treasure Hacks. We just recently met through introduction of the provost of Revell College, and Brandon wanted to learn from me what he might be able to, what kind of knowledge he might take that can apply to his life endeavors. I want to meet him because we both want to help people with soft skills. So, Brandon, what do you want to know?
I want to know, at least, because in the previous segment, you mentioned that telling clients that simply to tell himself, it's okay, I'm okay, and that completely changed his life. And I'm curious about the sort of the science behind being able to tell yourself something and then you to become that way. Because there's been many times in my life where I think back into the darkest moments and the words that I told myself was like, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. I didn't feel better at the time, but perhaps that contributed some sort of factor to recovery.
So let's talk about that. So I think that just in background, so I teach how people how to do self-hypnosis, how to shift their mind to get in a state of mind, not here and now, but sort of like in a very calm state, although hypnosis does not have to be necessarily calm. And then in that state, I teach them to talk to their subconscious, the part of their mind that they're not usually aware of, and that could be done through imagining a whiteboard that the subconscious can write on, or it can be done through having the fingers move to indicate yes, no, or I don't want to say. And then we have interaction with the subconscious. Now, scientifically, what the subconscious is, that's a very controversial and poorly understood subject. Freud is the first person to talk about subconscious, and he thought it was sexually driven. And Carl Jung, his student and later professional oppositional person, thought it was more than that. It was, the subconscious was far beyond just sexual issues. And my own concept is it's a part of you that's wise and knowledgeable and is accessible when you listen to yourself deeply. And that's what I taught that intern. I basically said to him, what does your subconscious have, what advice it has for you. Now, I think that the subconscious is located in the right brain. This is my model, and many people would disagree with this, but this is my model. So the left brain is where the speech center is, and when we talk, it's the left brain talking. When we do hypnosis and the subconscious expresses itself to me, oftentimes later the person doesn't even remember it, and I think it's because it's happened from the right brain. That's how I think of it. And so it's sort of like tapping into your second brain, if you would. The people who have an absent connection between a brain hemisphere, that's a connection called the corpus callosum, so some people don't have that connection, and their right and left brain can function independently of one another. So to my mind, it's really two different brains. So you learn to tap, if not to a second brain, to a different aspect of your brain. I think the reason when the subconscious says you're okay, that you get a different response than if you consciously tell yourself I'm okay, is because it's twofold. One is it's a different part of you. It's not you telling yourself. It's another part of you speaking, perhaps indeed a wiser part. And the other thing is your conscious brain often argues with you. I'm okay. No, I'm not. You'd like to be okay, but you're not really. When you're in hypnosis, the conscious mind is sort of quieted down. The negative voice is quieted down. So when the subconscious says you're okay, you're more receptive to it because you're not blocking it. Before we went on the air, I showed you about how what you say can make you stronger or weaker, as an example, right? So if you say to yourself, I'm okay, at the same time you say to yourself, I'm not okay, you've just negated it. But if you say to yourself, I'm okay, and there's no negation, then you feel okay. I think that's how it works.
That's just fascinating to me, because when we did that exercise, you saw my face right after I said, I'm weak, I'm weak, I'm weak, three times. And then you just push my arm down with ease. And that's, I mean, I never really understood hypnosis. When Paul said that you were in hypnosis, I was thinking like, you know, stuff you'd see on stage, and suddenly I'd be asleep and then I'd wake up and et cetera, et cetera. But truly it's much more fascinating than that, is to be able to, and to manifest things really. I think it gave me a whole new perspective on when my friends back at home always were joking about, like, I'm about to manifest an A. I'm going to get an A. I'm going to study really hard. And telling themselves this. And I'm like, that's kind of goofy. But now after doing that exercise and you pushing my arm down, it was, I don't know how I feel about that anymore. But anyways,
let me give you an example. I live here in La Jolla next to UCSD, and it's tough to find parking here. And one time my friend Lois came from Boston, and I told her, I'm going to take you to a restaurant in La Jolla, but before long, it'll be tough to find parking. And she said, no, it won't. There's always parking wherever I go. I shrugged my shoulders and said, okay. And we went down to La Jolla, and there's parking everywhere, including in front of the restaurant. Lois went back to Boston. I was in La Jolla looking for parking, and La Jolla being a tourist town, it's always hard to find parking. And my kids said, if only Aunt Lois was here, you'd find parking. So I said, Aunt Lois, help us find parking. And I was parking. I said, what's going on here? This is positive talk. So I started saying, when I go to La Jolla, I said, I'm going to find parking. And now I always find parking. So I'm going to throw this back to you. How do you think that works? I think there's a scientific explanation for that and a non-scientific. What do you think the scientific explanation for this manifestation might be?
I think my mind goes straight towards when you recite it consciously to yourself, that you try harder to achieve something. Maybe your brain is working harder to find a solution towards finding parking. So instead of going to the place you always drive to, or you search harder for it. Now, the parking example is kind of throwing me off, actually, because that kind of counters my example. Because I'm assuming you drove exactly to the same place to find parking, and the only difference is that you found parking and you didn't find parking, correct?
Well, almost correct, because when I was positive on parking, but I didn't find it right away, I would go around a second time because I knew it's going to be there. So I increased my chances.
Yeah. So
I changed my behavior.
Yeah, so that behavior change might not have happened if you didn't tell yourself that. And
correct.
There might also be confirmation bias involved as well, because now that you are successful, assumed that that was true when potentially in the future it might not be true. So you might circle around like once, twice, three times, third time you find parking, you're like, oh, it's true. So that also might be a player in this experience.
Correct. So people have often cite, I've given this example many times, so I know confirmation bias, but it happens virtually. It happens virtually every time. And my family knows this. And you could start doing this yourself if you drive around La Jolla. It works. And that's just a scientific explanation. I like to throw in a non-scientific explanation, so I'll just throw it out there, which is that if you throw out positivity in the universe, you get it back. Throw out negativity, you get it back, and that's called karma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not scientific, because to be scientific, you'd have to be able to measure my thoughts, predict what's going to happen, and see if it happens. But since you can't measure my thoughts, this still is out of the scientific realm, which does not mean it's not true. It just means we can't prove it yet. I believe it's true. I happen to have seen, as listeners to the show will know, I've seen this kind of quote-unquote coincidence happen multiple times, including even meeting you, Brandon. That things just fall into place. And you had things fall into place in your life plenty of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of how you interpret it. You could say confirmation bias. You could say that. But I could tell you, having lived a few years longer than you, it just keeps happening. And after a while, you just say, am I the luckiest person in the world? Or is there something else at play? So you can ponder that for the next 40 years and see if you have a different answer.
Oh, boy.
You have a final question for me that I can fill you in on?
Yeah. Not something that we can answer in a minute, but I guess one of the things that was irking me is you said earlier, listen to yourself. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So I think each of us because the subconscious is there, has inner wisdom that when we tap into, we can gain a lot of ideas that we may not have. And so not to try to short-circuit the answer, we'll come back to it right after these messages. So this is Center Point with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Center Point Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Special guest, Brandon Joe. We're discussing how we can tap into ourselves, listen to ourselves. You know, all of us, some people call it the conscience, right? We're going to do something wrong, and some part of you says, don't do that, and then you ignore it, and you might do something wrong, or you might not do something wrong. So I like to think of that conscience being part of the subconscious that people have experienced before. But when you ask, when you give yourself the opportunity to just sort of calm yourself down and let an answer percolate up, which is probably the simplest way to hear your subconscious, you'll hear ideas. They may not be the ideas that you want to hear, necessarily, and they're not ideas you have to necessarily follow, although if you're hearing your subconscious, you're probably wise to follow them. But I think all of us have a lot of wisdom within us. In fact, I've been very impressed with the wisdom shown by, well, I'm impressed with the wisdom you've shown, Brandon, and how you came out of a really deep funk. But I've met kids who are 9 and 10 years old. When they listen to themselves, they really know things. One of the things that teenagers do all the time is make stupid decisions. And the reason they make stupid decisions, not because they're stupid, but because they don't stop and think. They work on impulse. Oh, I want to do this. So they do it without thinking about the consequences. When you take an average teen and say, okay, pause, think, then they'll come up with reasons. Maybe I shouldn't do this. They don't always listen to those reasons, but they do know. They do know. And parents of teenagers sometimes are surprised to know that because teenagers don't act like they know. So that's what I mean by listening, is I think we have a lot of inner wisdom, and if we just tap into it, we can make wiser choices for ourselves.
Gotcha. And that kind of brings up another conversation I had with a professional about reflection and how very rarely, well, I would beg to differ on the fact that I was only teenagers, but even further on than just teenagers and going into adulthood, that there's many moments in which we don't reflect at all or think for a moment about the different things that we might be doing or how to improve what you might be feeling. Like if you're at a dead-end job, that there might potentially be another out to this rather than simply continue to work there. And maybe there's a problem with a relationship that there's potentially you need to take a moment to just think about what it is like in that sort of situation. One of the conversations I had with a humanities professor here that I'm good friends with is he was talking about his, well, life with a wife and how when you get married that you, and then in a way you stop growing because there's a level of, okay, I need to do this, you need to do that. Here's the different set of problems that we kind of reconciled with, and I'm good to continue on from here. And there is an emotion to stop and reconsider the potential ways that you can further grow as two individuals. And I found that fascinating. I don't really have a direction I'm going with this, but I'll let you take it from here.
So I would just caution you, so this, what you learned is that certain rules about marriage, quote-unquote, and this is what happens, and make sure you're not putting a limit on yourself. If you believe what this professor told you, that can become your reality. And mm-hmm. I think it's a better approach is to say, I'm married now, or I'm in a committed relationship now, things are different, but let's see how they can evolve. And things can evolve as long as you allow them to. And in a marriage, in a good marriage, you want to do this together with your spouse, and so make sure communication is good. So communication means not telling the spouse what you think, and not just doing whatever the spouse wants to do, but making sure each of you understands how the other one feels. And one way of doing that is to repeat back what I understand you to say is this. That's a good way of making sure that you hear each other, and then compromising. And if something is not really important, let it go. You know, there's an old saying, happy wife, happy life. And there's a corollary to that is, would you rather be right or happy? And so if you follow those rules, if something's not very important, let it go. And I shouldn't be sexist, so happy spouse, happy house or something like that. So if something is not important to a spouse, don't argue about it, let it go. But if something is important, do compromise, do talk it out, and grow from the experience. So life, when you have your first child, life changes as well in a permanent way. But it doesn't mean you're restricted. You just have to embrace it and move forward. I wonder if I can throw one more question back at you, Brandon, and that is, you've had some amazing life experiences already. Can you think of one lesson that you want our listening audience to take home with them? Because it's something they can employ today based on what you've learned? And I know these are difficult questions.
Definitely. I mean, I had an answer for this a couple of years ago, but no longer. I've been taught too many things at this point that I've kind of just, everything just conflicts with each other. And I like to say that my knowledge is the encapsulation of everyone that I met. It's not myself, really. So I'm just trying to think back at the conversations and what has helped me grow the most. I think the thing that hit me recently was Socrates' quote of "Know thyself." That really just hit home, or I kind of understood it a little bit more deeply now, because at least I function quite differently than other people. I'm a bit strange. For example, I kind of click with ideas. So the story goes that I went to college, and a good friend of mine from high school went to Stanford. We both came home, had a conversation. I was highly intimidated by him just because of that sort of status, and the conversation didn't go well. So I texted him afterwards, like, oh, I felt that conversation went really bad, and he's like, yeah. And something in me clicked, and I was not intimidated by talking to anyone of any status from then on, and it was very strange, but like little strange unconscious things that about myself sort of made me into who I am today, and just understanding how I can work with this side of me that is not crystal clear. Another example is like the optimal places for me to get into a flow state, which for me is right when I wake up at 8 a.m. I work until 12, and then when I am getting ready for bed from 9:30 to 1 are my most productive moments. And like knowing these little facts about yourself and striving to understand them has been amazing. I'll continue to do that probably for the rest of my life, and hopefully that'll snowball into something.
I think that's so important what you're saying. So a lot of people try to copy other people. Like they'll take a successful person and copy them, but it doesn't necessarily apply to them. You have to know yourself and find out what works for you, and be confident in your ability to get the most out of yourself. So you can get inspired by others, but don't try to become others. Each one of us needs to be the best version, or should be the best version of who we can be, and therefore make a unique and important contribution to this world, as you're demonstrating, my friend. It is so nice to meet you and to share this time with you, and thank you for coming on this radio show so soon after we met, and you've enriched us all. Thank you. Thank you for all the upcoming work you're going to do.
Thank you for having me on this opportunity. Every one of these opportunities kind of shocks me that they're coming to me in the first place, so I appreciate it, and having you a part of one of the amazing professionals I have talked to.
There you go. I'm saying you're manifesting us. Have fun with it. This is Stunner Point with Dr. Ron Unbar.